starting a brief series of lessons tonight on the subject of how Christians ought to treat each other. Tonight the subject is on lousy. I'm taking us where we are, and I'm going to take you where I want you to go. But words the Bible uses concerning our treatment of each other. I don't know how long it'll last, the study. Tonight, I don't know how long tonight's will last, but you would not want to know. But I don't know how many weeks, but I'm going to spend several weeks studying the Bible words concerning the treatment of each other. I'll discuss such words as patience and long-suffering and gentleness. And, you know, if all those words meant the same thing, the Lord wouldn't have made a list of them. But they're not synonyms of each other. Each is shines a little different light on the way that Christians ought to treat each other. Tonight, I'm going to give you what I think is, if not the most important word and grace that we need to extend to each other. If it's not the most important, it's way toward the top of the list. I'm going to teach tonight on the word forbearance. Forbearance. Open your Bibles, please, to Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2, and I'm reading verse number 4. Romans chapter 2, verse number 4. Or despisest thou the riches of his goodness and forbearance and long-suffering? Now, I especially want you to notice that long-suffering and forbearance are not the same thing. Forbearance and long-suffering, not knowing that the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance. Now look at chapter 3 and verse 25, please. Chapter 3 and verse 25 of Romans. Whom God has sent forth to be a propitiation through faith in his blood, to declare his righteousness for the remission of sins that are past, through the forbearance of God. Now, so far, we've only read verses that deal with God being forbearing. Now, I want you to turn to Ephesians chapter 4 and verse number 1. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse number 1. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that ye should walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you're called, with all lowliness, we'll discuss that one day, and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love. Now look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 9. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 9. And ye masters, now the nearest word we'd have to that would be employer, a boss. Ye masters, do the same things unto them. Now that's unto the servants, those who work for you. This is a boss, how he's supposed to treat his employees. Ye masters, do the same things unto them. Forbearing threatening. That's very interesting. Forbearing threatening. Now does that mean he should never threaten? No. But what does it mean? I'll tell you a while. Knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there any respect of persons with him. One last passage, Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, and forgiving. Somebody said, is forgiveness and forbearing the same thing? No, it is not. It has here meekness, long-suffering, forbearing, forgiveness. They're all different qualities. Forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. Now, what he's saying is this. If there's a quarrel, exercise forbearance. Now, I want you to close your Bibles. We're not going to read any more scripture. I don't want you taking notes. I'm just going to talk to you explain to you what forbearance is. I'm appalled at how Christian people treat each other. I'm going to take several weeks and talk to you about different words that describe the way that we're supposed to treat each other. Tonight, the word forbearance. Let me give you four little statements or four little descriptions of the word forbearance. The word forbearance, there are two or three words that are used in the Greek for the word forbearance. One means to hold up. I don't mean like stick 'em up. I mean to hold up, like stop, restrain. One of the words means to hold back. One meaning is the word to postpone. Another meaning is the word to send back. It is the opposite of the word prejudice. Prejudice. You say you're just prejudiced. What does that mean? The word prejudice is two words, prejudge. You judge too quickly. For example, somebody says that because a person is black, you judge them as having a certain characteristics or personality. You're prejudging that person because he's black. If you say that a black person is lazy, that all black people aren't lazy. That's prejudging a person and categorizing him. Let's say Mexican people. Sometimes they say they'll people like that. You must be a thief. No. All Mexicans aren't thieves. I knew one time who was not. And for example, he's Italian, so he must be in the mafia. And that's true. But he's a Southerner. So he must be dumb. Watch it, watch it, watch it, watch it. So now we'll continue back to sanity. It means it's the word forbearance is the opposite of prejudice or prejudging. So if prejudice is prejudging, forbearance is waiting until you have all the facts before you judge. If prejudice is judging without any facts, then forbearance is judging after you have all the facts. Now, let me give you several little statements that would help describe forbearance. One, forbearance is delay of punishment until you're sure of the crime and the justice that should be meted out. Let me illustrate like this. I never have been a charismatic. I'm not even close to being a charismatic. I haven't got an ounce of charismatic blood in me. But I never judged Jim Baker. And all the time he's being tried, I pulled for his innocence. I did the same thing for O.J. Simpson. I wanted him to be innocent. I want everybody to be innocent. I don't want anybody to be guilty. And so I do the best I can to withhold my judgment, I have not the authority to punish, but it means withholding your judgment or your punishment until you're sure of the crime and the justice. Now, hey, let's apply that to our children. Let's apply that to you grabbing a child and spanking the child. And children, if you don't you go home and preach this sermon to your mom and dad. I'll take care of that. But you grab a child and spank him before you understand exactly what the child has done or why the child did it. Forbearance is withholding punishment, whether it's in the court of law or in the bedroom or living room at home, until you're sure of the crime and what the justice is for the crime. Let me give you another little phrase that will help describe forbearance. Delay of punishment until you are past emotion. Till the emotion is over. I am not saying I did this all the time, but this was my policy, and I did it nearly all the time. If I wanted to spank one of our children, I always sent them to their bedroom. I said, Cindy, you go to your bedroom. Now go to your room now. And I'd leave Cindy there until I was no longer angry. And then 2 weeks later, I'd spank her. I hope somebody's home tonight. But I'm saying that that forbearance is withholding the executing of punishment until you know for sure what the crime is and what justice is, and then it's withholding punishment until the emotion, your emotion, is over. A Christian who executes justice or punishment before emotion is over, or before knowing the facts, then that person is guilty of not being forbearing. Number three, another little phrase that describes forbearance: delaying an opinion until knowing all the evidence. Did you hear what I said? Delaying an opinion until knowing all of the evidence. Now, what does that mean? That means, he said, well, my first opinion of him was, that's wrong. You're not supposed to have a first opinion. You're supposed to wait until you have all the evidence. Don't judge a person immediately. Don't decide immediately what to think about him. Don't draw an opinion until you have all the facts. Some of the finest people I know do not make good first impressions. So another phrase is delaying opinion, having all the evidence. That's forbearance. Another little phrase that would help describe it: withholding retaliation. Withholding retaliation. Or you could say, do not react. Decide to act, but don't react. Withholding retaliation. Or if it's this way, and I like this one best: forbearance is the control of one's emotions. Are you listening? The control of one's emotions. I've said that a person, ideally, none of us are perfectly mature at this, but ideally, a person should control his emotions like a pilot controls works the controls of an airplane. You ought to be able to decide when to get mad. That's why Paul said in Ephesians chapter 4, be ye angry. That's a command. Be ye angry. But he said, and sin not. What's he saying? He's saying, don't sin when you're angry. He said, now be angry, but you know when to get angry and decide when you get angry. Be able to control your emotions. Let me give you an example. And please listen to me now. I want to help you, and God knows we need help along this line of forbearance. I have recently, I had a funeral at 10 o'clock in the morning and a wedding at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. A year or two ago, I had a funeral, wedding, funeral, one day. You'd be shocked. If I gave you my schedule for yesterday alone, you'd be shocked. How many different emotions that I have to endure, I guess you'd say. I go from something wonderful like a staff meeting to something horrible like a deacon's meeting, just like that, you know. Anybody home tonight? Now, I'm saying, let's suppose here I am, I'm busy, let's suppose I'm in pastor school or youth conference or something else, and all of a sudden, this has happened, all of a sudden one of our dear members passes away. Like in vacation Bible school. It's happened several times. We've had to have a funeral during vacation Bible school. And I've got to get up here at 9 o'clock in the morning and act a fool. Not act a fool. I just reveal my foolishness. And then I have to stand up here just a few minutes later, and I have to try to comfort people. Now, what do? I know what makes me happy. Now, I do not believe in putting on tears. In fact, I'm not sure you can. But I do believe there are times when we ought to grieve. And there should be then certain exercises that help us to grieve. Let me illustrate. Before I have a funeral, I definitely want to comfort the family. So I promised God years ago I'd never have a funeral service without spending at least 4 hours preparing the message. Now, folks, we're talking about a 12 or 14 minute message. I spend at least 4 hours preparing every one of them. Now, but here's something else I do. I go the night before, And I go to the house late that night or sometime that night. I drive by the house of the people who've lost a loved one. Usually it's while they're having the viewing of the visitation at the funeral home. And I'll stop outside that house. And I'll spend sometimes 30 minutes, sometimes an hour outside that house praying for that family. And then I'll relive some experiences I've had with that family. And then, because I know that'll make me grieve. Now, you go from vacation Bible school, cutting up with Silly Billy Fuadini, the old timer, and Pee Wee, to a funeral service, you're going to have to work on yourself. Now, I don't mean fake sympathy. I mean genuine sympathy caused by your pulling the lever of reality that it helps you realize how much that person meant to you and how much you love that family. You know, folks, listen, this whole thing of flying off the handle, that is, letting circumstances determine our emotion. Now, forbearance is this. You get in control of yourself. You be in charge of your... I refuse to let something you say decide to make me mad. Then you're controlling my emotions. I refuse to let you determine what kind of mood I'm in. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm blue. My disposition depends on you. Fooey, 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 fooey on that stuff. No way. Forbearance means that you are in charge of yourself. Now, let me give you another little phrase that helps to define forbearance. It means not acting while angry. Another means hearing both sides of the story before you give a verdict. Did you hear what so-and-so did? They did. I just can't believe they would do that. How do you know they did? One person said they did. Suppose you were in court and the judge acted that way. Suppose you're in court and somebody got up and testified against you and said, this is what he did. And the judge said, boy, you got your nerve doing that. I sentenced you to 5 days in jail and a $5,000 fine. Hold it, judge. There's another side to this. Wait a minute, judge. Now you listen to me. You should never believe a negative report about anybody until the trial is over. Until you've heard both sides of the story. I'm giving you definitions now of forbearance. It is holding up, holding back, postponing, sending back, delay of punishment to assure of the crime and justice, delay of punishment till past emotion, delaying opinion to having all the evidence, withholding retaliation, controlling your own emotions and being in charge of yourself, not acting while angry, hearing both sides of the story before making an opinion. And then the next one, understanding the circumstances before acting. Let me explain what I mean. Let's take my staff, and please listen to me now. Let's take my staff. In my treatment of my staff, if Rose O'Brien comes in someday in a bad mood, I must remember that Rose has lupus. You follow me? Wouldn't hurt some of you husbands to think about that. Your circumstances of your wife. You come in and she's doesn't do everything that you want her to do. And all she's done all day is change diapers and rear kids and clean the house and do the washing and the ironing and cook you a meal. It wouldn't hurt all of us. It wouldn't hurt you to know understand the circumstances under which I live, and it wouldn't hurt me to understand the circumstances under which you live. And forbearance is, before you act, you stop and think about the circumstances. Let's go back to my staff. Rose O'Brien has lupus. Irma McKinney, my secretary, has Tom, who's been ill in a wheelchair back there right now, and she's... was afraid for a while she might lose her husband, and she had to wait on him for a while. And I must think about that in my treatment of Irma. I don't, but I should. Dr. Evans on my staff. Dr. Evans, constantly ill, has pernicious anemia and pernicious stubbornness, and those two diseases working together are awful. awful bad. No, he has some disease. I don't know what it's called. It's some big long name. And
pernicious anemia.
And pernicious anemia. And I must understand that. When Dr. Evans is maybe cancels a meeting or something with me, or comes in late, or doesn't seem to be quite as sharp as usual, I must understand that. I must, and forbearance is withholding my reaction or my action until I know the circumstances. I said Rose has lupus, Irma has Tom's illness, Dr. Evans is constantly ill, Roy, JoJo Moffat's having surgery tomorrow. Roy's not here tonight, he's with her, I'm sure, but Roy, I must be careful because JoJo has been ill for so long and had so many things wrong. And Roy's retarded. I must be careful about things and to know all the circumstances. Daryl Moore, you probably don't know this. Daryl Moore, one of our very vital men at the college, he has diabetes. Single ladies on my staff, they have no family to go home to at night. Don Boyd only has one eye. Keith McKinney has serious asthma that hounds him all the time. Now, you listen to me. Remember that little thing I used to say on the broadcast every morning as I went off air? Be good to everybody because everybody is having a tough time. Now you listen to me. It's time God's people learned how to treat each other with forbearance. What is forbearance? Delay of punishment until sure of the crime. What is forbearance? Delay of punishment until past emotion. What is forbearance? Delaying opinions of knowing the evidence. What is forbearance? Withholding retaliation. What is forbearance? Control of your own emotions, being in charge of yourself. What is forbearance? Not acting while angry. What is forbearance? Hearing both sides of the story. What is forbearance? Understanding the circumstances. Another phrase that describes it. A fair trial, if a trial at all. Now, I taught this in the lessons on justice, but I want you to hear it carefully now. My Bible says you're not supposed to hear an accusation against somebody unless you got two witnesses. Did you hear what I said? Did you hear what I said? Two witnesses. Didn't say two hearsayers. Two witnesses. You come to me and say to me, so-and-so did so, I'll say, did you see it? Bring me somebody else that's there. Now, once I have those two witnesses, doesn't mean I'm supposed to believe it. What you say, I'll not believe it till I have two witnesses. No, that's not scriptural. You're not even supposed to consider it till you have two witnesses. Two witnesses does not mean that you believe something. Two witnesses means that you consider it might be true. And a trial is, before a jury or in a courtroom, but two witnesses before listening are even deciding to listen to the case. Two witnesses. May I tell you what a witness is? That means with these two eyeballs here, you see it. You say, Brother Hiles, you let a bunch of folks get by. Listen to this statement carefully now. You let a bunch of folks get by with stuff. Now listen carefully. I would rather have 100 guilty people go free than one innocent person be convicted. Now, if that be a crime, go ahead and act on it. But listen carefully. I'd rather be the kind of person that leans toward letting the innocent, the guilty, go free. Now, I don't think the guilty ought to go free. I think that wrong ought to be punished. But the Bible said you're not even supposed to consider it till you got two witnesses, and then it's not necessarily true. Then you hear the case. A fair trial, if a trial at all. Two witnesses before listening or having to listen to the other side, and then the trial. And then don't put your shoes on. The last of these things defining, I'll give you some illustrations in a minute, giving the reason that a person's condemned. Are you listening? When our kids did something wrong, now, I'm not saying, two of our kids are here tonight, and they're going to stand up and say he's a liar. But I am, to a certain extent. I only tell little white lies. But I didn't always do this, but I guarantee you 95% of the time I did this. And I should have done it all the time. But when the kids did something wrong, I said, go to your room. Now, a while ago, I said, that did not punish the children until I was what? No longer what? Angry. But there's a second thing. I walked up, and I would say, now, Puddin, that's what I called each one of the girls, Puddin, do you know what you did wrong? Tell Daddy what you did wrong. And I wanted them to know the reason for the punishment. If they did not understand what it was, I explained it to them. And I then, once they knew, you see. Now, let me give you a few illustrations, and most of these you've heard before, but they're so applicable. Listen carefully. Dave's here tonight. When Dave was about 13 years of age, he was about 15 minutes late one Saturday afternoon. At our house, 3 o'clock meant 3 o'clock. Didn't mean 3:01. Meant 3 o'clock. If you come in 3:01, you're a minute late, and you disobey. Well, Dave got in 15 minutes late. That's worthy of capital punishment. I was very upset with him. And I immediately punished him rather severely. Now, wait a minute. And he was, and I said, son, just what was so important that you came dragging in here 15 minutes late?
I was buying you a Christmas present, having it wrapped.
You see the illustration? Now, most of you live that way. You decide immediately, and while you're angry, let me slap your hand. I remember one time when Becky was being bad, and she was just old. She was barely wearing diapers. I don't mean they're falling off. I mean she was almost the place where she was no longer wearing diapers. And when you got folks as dumb as you are to preach to, you got to explain things very carefully. And so Becky was throwing a fit, and impetuously I said, hush! Ever do that? You ever do that? How many times today, for example? And she wouldn't hush. Did you hear me? Hush! Slapped her hand again. I guess I slapped her hand 10 times before I found out that she had a diaper pin stuck in her little bottom. Her mother had changed the diaper. Now, see, that's what you call prejudging. That's what you call prejudice. That's the way some of you people are rearing your children. It's the way some of you employers treat your employees. It's the way some of you employees treat your employers. That's what you call prejudice. It's the opposite of forbearance. I was preaching for a fellow named J.E. Hopkins in Mesquite, Texas, years ago. A lady sitting right over here made faces at me while I preached. And I just stopped, and I didn't point to her, but I said, boy, thank God I can laugh and smile. Some of you folks look like you. If you're happy, you ought to tell your face about it. She kept on making faces while I preached. When the service was over, I said, Pastor, I want to talk to you. I said, there's a lady about 5 rows back over here on my left, right in the middle of the section. You watch her. She's going to cause you trouble. And Brother Hopkins said, yes, I'll tell you why she is making faces. Her husband beats her every time she comes to church. Tonight he beat her across the back until the skin was peeled off her back and her back was raw. And she is making faces because of the pain she suffered for coming to church. You ever do anything like that? That's where most of us live. The old story I've told you again and again. I was in Fayetteville, North Carolina preaching. There was no center aisle. And the high school and junior high kids were here on the front. Had about 800 folks there that morning. High school and junior high kids on the front. Sitting right in the middle was a high school girl who was slumped down in her seat. I mean, you could just see her neck. I said, young lady, would you sit up straight, please?
She wouldn't do it. I said, nothing, young lady. I said, sit up straight. We're not going to sit that way while I preach. And she didn't do it. I said, okay, if I have to sit again, I'm going to come down and straighten you up. A lady got up back in the back and walked over and down that aisle and across, and she got the girl and took her out. It was her daughter. She was a hunchback. I had prejudged forbearance. If I keep telling you all this stuff, you're going to vote me out of the church. What a lousy guy. I don't deserve to be a pastor. I'm resigning right now. I make the motion. We fire me. But I'm trying to let you know that perfection stumbles every once in a while, too. Now, forbearance is waiting, restraining, holding back, if you please. Let me give you the best illustration of a lack of forbearance I know. The Olympic Games are being held in Atlanta, Georgia. All of a sudden, a bomb goes off in the center of some of the activity. The men who know less about forbearance than anybody in the world, it's spelled P-R-E-S-S. The most godless, most unfair, unscriptural, unjust bunch of fools in the world are the press. Except most of us read it and believe it. Unless it's about us. And what they do? The press. I've forgotten that fellow's name. Yeah. The press indicted, tried, and convicted Mr. Jewell. The guy's life is ruined. Ruined. The whole world thought he was guilty. Why? Because the press, as usual, was not forbearing. Happens over and over again. Illustration. As you know, I'm not a charismatic. I'm more Catholic than charismatic. As I've said before, I'll have the Pope here before I'll have Oral Roberts. I can prove it. Oral Roberts is lined up for next July and the Pope for next May. But I'm not charismatic. I'm more Catholic than charismatic. I think the charismatic movement is the devil's tool to unite, and I'm not talking about promise keepers and all that kind of stuff, to unite religions, good and bad, together for the coming of the false prophet. But I picked up the newspaper, Hammond Times. Don't let me say what I want to say right now. He wouldn't keep me from it. I picked it out times. And it said the daughter of the pastor of the Family Christian Center in Griffith. Now the press said she had been found, and something. If it's true, it's terrible. And now, If it been a plumber's daughter, it wouldn't have been the paper. Then a carpenter's daughter or a steel worker's daughter wouldn't have been the paper. You know why? Because the devil wants to use the press to attack religion. Now, again, I'm not charismatic. But I don't like injustice. I don't care what denomination the person that's wounded is a member of. Immediately, I picked up the telephone. Called the Family Christian Center over in Griffith. You know, they got one of those deals. We don't have it here because I'm old fogey. But,
good morning, this is the Family Christian Center.
They do it in our fundamental churches too.
If you want to talk about religion, press 1. If you want to talk about politics, press 2. If you want to talk about the Cubs, press 911.
If you want to talk about your health, press 4. So you press 4.
Now, if your problem is your arms, press 1. So you press 1. If your problem is your right arm, press 1. If your left arm, press 2.
I finally got through. But nobody answered. They said, recording. And I said to the pastor, I said, Pastor, this is Brother Hiles, pastor of First Baptist Church, Hammond. I read in the paper what they said about your daughter. I want you to know I'm praying for justice to be done. And I want you to know I hope it's not true. Now, again, you know what I think about the charismatics. But I do not believe it's right for someone to... The city of this whole area thought that young lady out there was guilty. And some of the folks that thought that are sitting here right now, too. And I have an idea. Some of you said, I can't believe that a preacher's daughter would do that. You don't know that a preacher's daughter did that. All you know is that some reporter said she did. I want to give you the areas where most of the infractions occur. And then we'll go. Well, we won't go. We'll have a business meeting. There you go, prejudging. Most of the infractions against forbearance. Hey, by the way, the same Bible that commands you to be forbearing is the one that commands you not steal. If I preached a red hot sermon against forbearance, we wouldn't have much shouting around next Sunday night. Are you for forbearance? Same Bible that says you're not supposed to kill or commit adultery or covet or steal or extort or be a homosexual. Same Bible says commands us to be forbearing to each other. Now, where are the infractions? Number one, from a parent to a child. Every parent in this room tonight ought to resolve to go home and resolve to do these things I've mentioned and be forbearing to your children. Well, Hiles, if I took 10 minutes or 15 minutes to spank my child every time I spank my child, I wouldn't have time to do anything else but spank my child. Now, you listen carefully. If you'd quit spanking that kid in a fit of temper and exercise forbearance while you spank that kid, you would not spank that kid a tenth as much as you spank him now. Everybody, whether he's 3 years old or 93 years old, deserves justice. Where are other... And by the way, I don't want any of your children throwing this up to mom and dad, or I'll preach against you next Wednesday night. Next place where the infractions occur more often, teacher to pupil. Teacher to pupil. I recall when Cindy was in school, and Cindy was wrong in this. Cindy decided when she was in high school she was going to become the police department of Hammond Baptist High School and also the judge to declare justice. And one time a little girl, I won't go to the whole story, one time a little girl next to Cindy dropped a book. And when she did, she giggled. And the teacher punished the girl for giggling. And Cindy went up to the teacher and said to the teacher, that's not fair. Now, Cindy was wrong in doing that. You get that? You sorry rascal. You worst kid we got. And she said, what's fair? Now, Cindy was wrong doing that, but the teacher was wrong in not finding out why that girl giggled. If all of a sudden you dropped the book and tried to get it, and you dropped that, you didn't quite get it, and tried again, didn't quite get it, and you dropped it, you'd probably giggle some yourself. It's so easy for this to happen in the classroom. Another place where it happens often, employer to employee. Another place where it happens often, child to parents. You don't know all the details. Another place where it's prevalent, Sunday school teacher to a pupil. Another place where it's prevalent, pastor to people. As I mentioned a while ago, the lady that made faces at me, the hunchback girl. It's so easy. Pastor to people.
I was preaching in California, and a guy got up and walked out on me. I'd forgotten about this. I wish I hadn't even thought about it now. He got up, started to walk out, and I said, "Sit still." He turned around and just vomited on the floor right there in front of all of them. He obeyed me. And G.P. Wiggs was chairman of my deacons in Texas. He was sitting right there on the second row one Sunday morning, about 11:45. I was right in the middle of my sermon. And he got up to walk out. And I said, "G.P., sit down." He kept on walking. And I said, "Where are you going?" He turned around and hollered out, "To the bathroom." You know, I hate myself. It happens, pastor to people. It happens from people to pastor. Not only do you not know what burdens I may carry, but I don't know what burdens you may carry. It would not be impossible for me to be coming from a counseling session with a family about to break up with little children involved. And then maybe a funeral service. And my heart is broken. It would not be impossible for me to see you at a store somewhere in a shopping center and not even realize I saw you. And you may say, "Well, pastor, he knows me. He wouldn't even speak to me." Well, you say, you don't know. And I don't know. It'd be a wonderful thing tonight if all the parents in this room would decide to obey the command of forbear. And if all that the teachers in this room, both school teachers and Sunday school teachers, would decide to forbear. And if all of the employers would decide to forbear. And all the employees would decide to forbear. And all the children would decide to forbear. And if I would decide to forbear. And if you would decide to forbear. I'll tell you a story. And I'll close. This to me, one of the most amazing things I've ever heard in my life. Heard it Monday night. I was preaching early Tuesday morning. I was preaching in California. Moreno Valley, California. Monday night, they rented the Civic Center in Riverside, town right next to it. And a big crowd of people there from all over Southern California. Tuesday morning, we met in the church, Pastor Dr. Mark Turner, one of our graduates. And Dr. Bob Gray told the most amazing story. 17 years ago, he became pastor of the Longview Baptist Temple. I've been trying to get him to change the church for years. I call him Rabbi Gray. I call him Rabbi Gray because he pastors the temple. But 17 years ago, he went there. They had a knockdown dragout. Knockdown dragout. The man who was chairman of the pulpit committee, the most responsible for getting him there, led in the opposition against Brother Gray. In fact, he wrote me a letter. Said, "Your student is tearing our church up." And, of course, I stood for Brother Gray. He wrote Dr. Curtis Hudson a letter. And Dr. Hudson stood for Brother Gray. And we always stand for the accused if we don't know the facts. So all you hear is, get one person. But anyway, that man led in pulling more people out of that church than stayed. Left Brother Gray with a handful of people. His bitterest enemy. Last Sunday morning, Brother Gray looked out and there that man sat in the service. If I'd been Brother Gray, I'd have gotten behind a bulletproof vest or something. But there he sat, 17 years later. After the service, he asked Brother Gray, "Could I talk to you?" And sometime during that day, he came back that night, by the way, and he said, "Brother Gray, for 17 years I've been wrong.
can I come back? 17 years later, can I come back? And Brother Gray said, of course you can come back. Now, what caused that church split? What caused that man, 70, Brother Gray said, he's an old, old man now, 70. He said that's what he said. And I did not exercise forbearance. But what caused it? He wasn't forbearing. He didn't check and see the circumstances. Impetuously, spontaneously, he acted. And now he is an old man. 17 years later. If I were you, and I were guilty of not being forbearing, and if it was something rather serious, I'd make amends. I mentioned a while ago the hunchback. I was humiliated. I hadn't preached my sermon yet. I was an introduction. I preached the entire sermon realizing that I had prejudged and not been forbearing. As soon as I finished preaching, I said, I can't sign any Bibles. I can't shake any hands. I want to talk to the pastor. I said, Pastor, would you please take me over to the house of that young hunchback girl? He drove me over there immediately. I mean, within 15 minutes after the service was over, I was punching the doorbell. And the mother came to the door. And I said, I've come to tell you I'm sorry. I made a horrible mistake. And I'm sorry. I said, I hope there's something I can do. She said, very kindly, Brother Howells, I know you carry a heavy load. Well, that's a wonderful spirit, isn't it? I know you carry a heavy load. She said, my boy is a student at your college and you're his hero. And this is not going to change anything. I said, let me do something. And she did. I myself bought her and her husband and the daughter airline tickets, round trip to Hammond, Indiana. I myself put them in a hotel, and I myself paid for their meals. They come and visit their son. On a Sunday morning, they sit right up there in that section as my guests. Now, I'm not saying that you ought to... Yeah. All you folks that have been too quick to judge me. You may come by our house tonight and give Ms. Howells now a round-trip ticket to Hawaii if you'd like. Now, I reckon a lot of people tonight need to make some adjustments in the way you treat each other. Practically, if not, every church split in a fundamental soul-winning church in America could be avoided by the exercising of forbearance by the people. 99% of all the arguments in your house, you guys get mad at your wives. Did you ever stop and think what a wonderful thing it is to be a man? Wouldn't you hate to be a woman?